This Audio Visual is a podcast aimed at engaging image makers about their businesses and creative process. My name is Ayanda Charlie, and I'm guest hosting quite excitedly. And my guest is Usabelo Mkabela, who is a photographer and a writer. But you say you write sometimes.
No, I take photos sometimes.
You take photos sometimes,
yeah.
But that's okay.
Yeah.
Why don't you want to call yourself a photographer?
Because I went to a studio the other time and I couldn't operate lights.
Okay.
No, because, yeah, I think the people who... I just document things. I just happen to have a camera. You know, I don't want to call myself a photographer. I'm just reluctant.
Yeah. I understand that. Yeah. For respect for those who
Are you know
certified.
What I mean? Exactly. You know, Indian cities on them.
Yeah. When did you start taking photos?
Shit, I should have started. 2015. Yeah.
Okay.
Some of it, yeah.
I happen to remember 2015.
Yeah, okay. What is happening in 2015?
2015. I had just left Live, where we met. And that's actually where I'd like to start.
Okay. I was taking photos, so maybe it's 2014, but yeah.
2014.
Okay.
Take me back there. That's where I first met you. It was a publication called...
Live Mag.
Live Mag. It was an online publication.
Yeah.
And you were... I don't remember if you were my editor. You were my editor.
No.
What were you? You were just a senior writer.
Yeah, and...
Who happened to edit...
Companies make people do things that,
that they don't pay them
you
for.
You know? But I was happy to do that because, you know, in general, I'm all about tricking the system. Exploit me.
Yeah.
I make sure I get something out of it. So I was like... Really, where does one learn to be an editor?
Mm.
I might as well just do it now while there are editors here who are overlooking the process. So,
yes. Yeah. That was shade. If anyone,
no,
I don't know if anyone caught that.
No. What do you mean? What did I say? What?
Editors were overlooking the process.
No. Overlooking, overseeing? Overseeing.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Not overlooking.
Oh, okay,
oh my gosh.
Like, it's okay. It's okay.
English, bro.
It's okay.
Yeah.
At which point was that role in your career? Because obviously this was my first encounter with you, but I'm wondering what you'd done before.
I just written, really. That's, to this day, that's all I've done. I've just written.
Yeah.
So I'd been writing for how many years? For a year. I started like writing, I'd say semi-professionally in 2014.
You started publishing?
Yeah, to be like, so I'd been writing, but yeah, prior to that, I'd been writing, you know.
Mm.
But yeah, let's just say I just started writing professionally at that time.
And why Live Magazine? What were you doing there? How did you get there? Because I want us to go on a journey of just, you know,
I feel
how
you.
You've come here.
Because I had gotten excluded from UCT, which I did on
Legends
purpose.
Legends always are.
Like, I remember that I didn't write that control exam. I was like, fuck it, I'm not going there.
Yeah.
You know, which was irresponsible, but I don't regret it. So I got excluded because I didn't want to do engineering anymore. I was left with like a year and a half or something like that. You know, it gets tricky.
Yeah.
So...
Exactly.
You know? So I was like, I really looked at it. I was like, I really want to chase this dream, you know, and this is my last chance. And I was thinking, if I really graduate and become an engineer, I mean, I don't think I would still be want to be sleeping on couches and being like, I'm chasing this dream. I was like, no safety net. Fuck this shit. We're going to do this. So what happened is when I got excluded, I didn't have the balls to tell my family that I kind of did it on purpose and I don't want to go back to engineering. My brother found me, made me find a place in UJ. I was like, at least I'm going to be in Joburg. So I heard about, what's this, the Live Mag internship training program, whatever they call it. Manez shared that link, you know, because he had done the program. So he was like, he recommended it, and I applied, and yeah, I started the program that you went through. Not as refined as it was when you guys were doing it.
I can imagine.
So it was the offices were here in Bram, like there by Kitcheners.
Yes.
So our mentor
And this is what year?
Yeah.
This is, which year is this?
This is 2013, yeah. Yeah, first half of 2013. So I did that, and, you know, I used to go to UJ, and I'd be like, ugh. Still this shit again. Yeah. But when I went to, and when I bunked classes and went there, I was like, this shit makes me feel alive. As corny as that sounds, I was like, this is where I wanna be. But obviously, you know, money is always a struggle. So it was quite tricky, but you know, I was still getting support from my family because I was still a student. But yeah, come June 2013, I dropped out and I went back to Cape Town. Again, I rejoined the program in Cape Town, which was the head office and they had more mentors, more support. Yeah, so I did that. So I did that program for 9 months. In our time, each cohort would last for 3 months because it was called an issue because it was still print.
Yes.
So you guys would come work on a quarterly mag and get the fuck out. So I did 3 of them. And I wasn't the only one who'd done that. Some people were doing it. So what happens is...
And so you're doing each course.
Yeah.
And you aren't being paid for each one.
No. No.
And you've dropped out of school, so you're not being paid. You're not being supported at home.
Yeah, it was bad. There was a time I didn't have money to take the train. Like, I ran away from the ticket guards. I was like, oh my gosh, this is the ghetto. I don't want to do this shit. Like, that day, I was so depressed. I was like, I know I'm not that poor, okay? But, you know, I think my family was showing me tough love because they were like, bro, we gave you an opportunity that not many people get. You were standing in UCT and you decided to be a smart ass about it.
Yeah.
You're on your own now, you know?
Yeah.
My brother, he allowed me to live in his house, but he was like, time's ticking, bro.
Yeah.
Make a plan. So I was under that pressure, you know? Should I still carry on?
No, so when did you get, I just wanna, when did you first get paid?
When did I first get paid? Wow, that's a good question. Oh, let's see. So in 2013, I never got paid for anything. I mean, yeah, for writing. And then 2014. Oh, so what happened is in 2013, because early 2014, the company was going from print to digital.
Yes.
And because really I love the internet and I was doing a lot of cool shit on the internet and just even on the website, I was working with Linda Gutlenkosi. She was the digital mentor, something like that. And she really liked me. So she was like, yeah, work with me. And when the company was switching from print to digital, they needed someone young to take over. I think Linda was also leaving. So she suggested me. Actually, all the mentors, they were like, this is your guy. So it was Linda, Shalom, Lee. Who else was there? Yeah, because those are the ones that I was working with as a writer. And then, so I was team manager. So I was in charge of like the trainees. It was a weird job. But again, I was like, oh my goodness, money.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. To finally do the things that I want and to save up for a camera and to be able to buy a ticket for the train. So I did that, you know, and then what happened is we had a new mentor, Jonji, and I told her that I don't want to be complacent just being team manager. I want to write.
Yes.
So Jonji was like, of course you can still write, you still fit the age gap, because I think it was between 20 and 18 to 25?
Probably, yeah. I think
something
it was,
like that.
Somewhere around 25.
I don't know. I think it was 25, 26, something like that. She was like, yeah, you can still write. And so what Jonji did is she was like, you know, I feel like you are too next level to be writing for the site. The site is for trainees. So she actually volunteered. She was like, every week, you must... we must work on a piece of yours that we're going to try and send to other publications.
Wow.
You know, she's a seasoned journalist.
Yeah,
she knows everybody.
Yeah. This just for the audience's sake, this is Jonji Mkiongolo, who was one of the editors at O Magazine when it still was here.
Sorry?
She used to edit for work at O Magazine.
Yeah.
I think she was one of the editors.
Yeah.
That's just the background
prior,
on who she was. Yeah. Years prior to coming to life.
And she was writing for City Press, Mail and Guardian.
Seasoned journalist.
Everybody. So what happened is, and then so So, sorry, I jumped. So before that happened, I had already started writing for OK Africa. So towards the end of 2013, when the program was ending and people were getting jobs and I was not getting anything, I was panicking. So I was sending my pitches to everybody, you know, and I just happened to send my pitches to OK Africa and they were like, yeah, I would like to take you on as a contributor, but we don't have money at the moment. Mm. So I was that writing for free shit.
Yeah.
And I was like, at this moment, I take any opportunity that will allow me to do this shit. Because apart just from wanting a career out of it, I was like, these are important stories. I don't see anybody writing about Youngster. I don't see anybody writing about the music that I care about.
And I wanna just stop there.
Yeah.
Because I love that you went straight to pitching and all that, because that's the crux of the conversation today. That's why we're sitting down.
Yeah.
So you started pitching even before there was even the possibility of being paid.
Yeah.
And years later, you still are in the business of pitching stories. Of course, now you have relationships with these publications, and they know what you do.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, number one, how you did that for the first time.
Yeah.
Like, how do you begin to present yourself?
Yeah.
And about something that you feel isn't being written about enough. So you have to paint the picture to someone and convince them that this is important.
Yeah.
How you do that? Yeah.
So they taught us how to pitch at Live. There was actually, like, the course, you know, there was a session called This Is How You Pitch. So Lee, again, seasoned journalist, international even. I think she's written for every big publication you can think of. So she was like, she was telling us, you need to keep in mind, editors are busy. You must captivate them from the very first sentence. Your pitch shouldn't be too long. Your pitch should do A, B, C, and D. And I had people like Tidius, who was already doing this internet writing shit about this rap shit. So I would go to him and be like, bro, you write for Mahala, how does that work? And he would be like, here's the email address, do this and that, do that and that. And, you know, he gave me pointers. It was like, you know, you're in Cape Town. I was hosting a show with Andy at some point on Bush Radio, and he was like, there's a lot of content you can generate from that, you know? And I was like, really? The possibilities are endless on the internet, you know. So I started a blog. I was like, if nobody's gonna publish this shit, I'll put it on my blog. Again, I got that from him, and you become a digital ninja, really. And so by the time I was like pitching to an OK Africa, my shit was professional. Like, it was like, okay, this guy knows what he wants, because they just answered that very first email. They were like, of course, we'll take you on.
Yeah.
And again, I'd a body of work that I had done on the Live side. So I think all we need is just a stepping stone.
Mm.
All you need is a stepping stone, is to have that portfolio so you can go to another website and pitch, and by writing for them, you're building up your portfolio. So you're moving up. So I went from Live to OK Africa to the Mail and Guardian. And, you know.
Yeah. And now your work speaks for itself.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So, yeah, I answered your question?
You did.
Yeah.
I just want to slow down, because you said at some point your pitch needs to have A, B, C, and D.
Yeah.
I want the A, B, and C, and D.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it doesn't have to be a long list.
No, I feel you. So again, I think it's a balancing game for the writer. So again, you think about you can never send the same pitch to the same public to different publications.
Okay.
So if I were to pitch a profile of Pretty Ugly to the Mail and Guardian, I'll have to do a lot more explaining.
Okay.
As to just give the editor context. I don't think they listen to rap like that.
Yes.
You know, maybe they listen to Lauryn Hill or they know about Squatter Camp, or they know about AKA or Casper. And so it's not easy.
Yeah.
I just have to tell you that it's not easy. A lot of my pitches, especially to print publications, to this day, I still struggle with that. And I want people to know that. So the successful ones, you know, you do a lot of explaining. So you're like, again, I'll use an example with Pretty Ugly. You're like, you know, Pretty Ugly is from the East Rand. The East Rand has like this array of lyricists, and, you know, Pretty Ugly does trap, but he has these really nice flows. And maybe you're like, he put out this album called Egypt. It means, it's an acronym for everything godly and patience. And then you're like, you know, in the South African hip hop scene, Pretty Ugly, holds this position. You paint the picture.
So you have to know what you're talking about.
Why would you pitch a...
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's that. But also, I think a thing that a lot of people, and I forgive this personally because, you know, I know how hard it is to be young and really just trying to get into the game.
Yeah.
A lot of pitches aren't up to...
Not up to standard.
Yeah. Trying to find a different word. Yeah, they're not up to standard because this person doesn't even introduce themselves. I think you have to introduce yourself because you live in a world where you basically just... Okay, let me try this again. So what you do is you tell the person who you are, you know? You're like, I've written for A, B, C, and D. And so also you can just use... You can show them an example of the type of piece that you want to write for them. So if you're pitching a profile, you share that really, really kick-ass profile that you did that maybe people said it was dope online. You're like, this is what I've done for this publication.
So you're pitching yourself and you're pitching the story.
Yeah. So in the beginning, so a pitch of mine would go like, hi, my name is Sabelo Mkabela. I am a writer. Arts and culture writer. I focus mostly on music, particularly South African hip hop. I've written for The Mail and Guardian, for OK Africa, for Mahala, for whoever I've written for. I haven't pitched in a while, actually. I just realized.
Must be nice.
I'm sorry. So what happened is, and then what happens, you hyperlink to your byline on those publications, and then you get into the story that I would like to do a profile of Pretty Ugly. He's great because of A, B, C, and D. He will be great for your publication because you guys don't cover the young hip-hop artists and you're missing out on the wave. You don't really put it like
that. I mean, yeah.
You know, but that's essentially what you're trying to tell them. That's how I would say a pitch goes. So maybe you can tell them also that I have a relationship with this artist, so an interview with them won't be an issue. Yeah. Or you tell them that I've already reached out to them, they're down, because sometimes I can go to a publication and say I would like to interview AKA. And then they're like, okay, go ahead and do the story. And I don't even know how to get a hold of AKA.
Headlights.
You send emails. Yeah. You just reach a dead end. And you don't want to, especially when you're pitching for the first time, you don't want to make a bad first impression that, oh, this person, you gave them an opportunity that they should go and interview this and they never came back.
Because the artist never responded.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that's such an interesting point because I listened to a podcast called Long Form.
I know Long Form.
Most people, yeah. Most writers listen to Long Form. And one of the latest episodes, one of the journalists that they were interviewing, it's a British journalist, she's also a broadcaster, I've forgotten her name, she was saying she had to learn quickly that, you know, you can pitch an interesting story and really have the best angle for it, and then they'll just give it to a staff writer of theirs. And she found that the best way for her as a freelancer to be given that story is to say, I already have access to this person. I've already spoken to them. They're expecting me.
That has never happened to me.
Really?
Where I pitch something and then they give it to a staff writer. No, it's
is it because happened. Well, I mean, I think a hack for that is that you would already have the access to that person.
Probably, yeah.
As
or maybe
just
when they
like,
don't take it, they really just don't like it.
They really just don't like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's a surefire thing to be able to be given the story that you're pitching.
Yeah. So I mean, even now, again, I'm a writer / editor. I'm not an editor, full time editor. I probably will be in the next months or years or something like
okay,
that.
Put it
maybe,
out there.
Maybe not. I hope I'm not jinxing it. So what happens is some writers, they will come and pitch a series, you know. There's this writer who pitched this series about Afrobeats producers, and they're like, we're going to talk to the people who've worked with them. In general, in my experience, a story that involves more than 3 interviews, you say no, unless it's tedious or pitching it, or someone like super, super seasoned because you believe them. But if it's like, I don't want to say a young person, but somebody who's not super, super experienced, it becomes too tedious. You chase the writer a lot because they're also chasing the subject.
Yes.
Because you really think everybody around, let's say you want to write a piece on AKA, but you know you can't, you don't have access to him. You will talk to the people who worked with him. So you're like, I can get a hold of Tweezy. Maybe you guys follow each other on Twitter. You hit up Tweezy on the DM, he doesn't respond. And if one person doesn't respond, the story is already
shaky.
You know what I mean? So I think as an up and comer, and I know we all want to write these big stories, don't be overly ambitious. That's advice I would give to somebody who's like trying to get their foot in the door. Interview an up and coming artist, you know, and I'm not sure what platforms in SA really want profiles on up and coming artists, but the publication I work for, we like up and coming artists.
Africa.
Yeah, we like up and coming artists. So there's a lot of people who like, yeah, there's this artist in Mamelodi who's done A, B, C, and D. I'm like, go for it. This person, you have access to them. And it's always, it makes me feel good to look back and be like, we were one of the first people to interview this artist, and now they are like super, super big. And it's social currency for the publication because it's like, oh my gosh, they got their ear on the street.
You put people on.
You know,
yeah.
But also just, I know the struggle. I have a lot of artist friends who struggle with getting coverage, and I'm like, I don't want to become what I was fighting.
Yes.
You know? Yeah.
A gatekeeper.
Yeah. But yeah. I digress. What are we talking about?
No. Let's digress. Yeah. We're digressing.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. I mean, you're mentioning that you have a secure position in a publication.
Yeah.
And that you said you oscillate between writing and editing.
Yeah.
And so you have a perspective that I think many people don't have access to right now, which is as a freelancer, as someone who makes a living, you know, pitching. What do I do right now? What are publications looking for? Of course, you can't speak for every publication.
Yeah.
But how do I position myself in this time? There are no live shows. What am I going to do?
Tough question. Again, I think, the way I see it, so what happens is a lot of people, they go on a publication and they're like, oh my gosh, they write a lot about Nigerian artists, or they write a lot about these woke artists, or they write a lot about me. I'm just like, you cover woke artists, I got this dumb nigga, you know, who by being dumb, there's a lot of wokeness in his shit.
Okay.
You know, I think I'll give an example with a publication like New Frame.
Yes.
They're very social justice.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like you look at an artist like AKA and you wouldn't think that New Frame would be interested in an AKA, but you're like, have you listened to Touch My Blood though? I feel like he's the only rapper who's actually told Musa My Mind a shit on a song. No one has ever done that. But the thing is, so if you really, really are about the shit that you say you're about, you will know more than the layman or laywoman or, yeah. So I believe that you should give them what they don't have. That is my opinion. So it's like at OK Africa, like I do a lot of the hip hop stuff. So when somebody comes and like, I want to interview KO, I'm like, we've interviewed him twice in the last 2 years. I can talk to somebody at Sony and be like, yo, can we interview KO? And the interview will happen next week. But I want you to come and be like, there's this Amapiano artist who's doing A, B, C, and D, and I have access to him so I can interview them. So again, I think you can't go on OK Africa and be like, oh, there's a lot of South African hip-hop shit, I want to pitch South African hip-hop shit. I'm like, nah, bruh, pitches Chrome, pitches Amapiano, you know? I don't know if that's how other publications work.
That's refreshing because you are right. The instinct is to go, well, this is what these people do. Let me give them what they typically want. And of course, it is also difficult to know which publications are not secretly, but are actually looking for something different to what they already have.
Yeah.
What do you think about being a niche or like beat writer? Like someone who's, I mean, that's what you do.
Yeah. What do I think of that? It's worked wonderfully for people who I've seen do it. But my experience when I was coming up, and a lot of people were like, diversify your content, you need to get out of this hip-hop bubble. And I was like, I've never told anybody to get out of that politics bubble. I don't understand why. I'm serious.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
That social justice or gender bubble. There are people who write about politics all the time. Nobody ever tells them, why don't you write about hip-hop? No one ever says that. So for me, again, I think it helps that I'm stubborn. I was just like, I love this shit, fuck you, bro. Like, I really don't want to write about Julius Malema. I will write about Julius Malema because AKA said something about him. For me, it's like, this is what the young people of this country make of the country as it is now. And so the importance of being a beat writer or specialist, I think people sleep on it.
Yeah.
I think people sleep on it because it's like, if you write about everything, you know, I've gotten opportunities like, you know, writing a Your MTV Raps and this other show for SABC One. Both directors or the managers of the project, they came to me and they were like, we saw your work and we were like, if anybody can write a South African hip hop show, it's you because that's the shit that you do, you know? So I think it's very, very important to specialize, but I'm not saying that people then shouldn't write about other things, but I just want to, you know, it's like Tsiriso, he writes about a lot of shit, but whenever I think of a writer who can write about a jazz album, I think of him. I'm just like, because no one, he's been about this shit for, it's second nature to him. Like, I mean, I see for myself, like, profile with an artist or hip hop artist, it's the easiest thing to do, you know? So I think it's very important, but a lot of people shy away from it because, you know, and again, on the internet, people wanna look diverse, people wanna look this and that. And I'm really, really okay with people thinking I'm dumb because I write about rap only. I know I am a smart nigga, and I'm just like, what you make of me is your own problem. Yeah. And this has really worked for me and other people who've come before me. So I think it's very important. And if I were to give advice to people, I would say, be that person, really. If, but again, it depends what a person wants to do, you know?
Yeah. Well, cool. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's it for me. I want to ask you a simplistic question just to close. I know it's so simplistic.
Okay.
And I want you to answer it as ignorantly as you want. Is there money in writing?
Yes, there's money in writing, but there's no money in journalism.
Ah! Gagged. Okay.
There's money. Yeah, can I explain that?
Yeah.
There's money in writing, but there's no money in journalism because, you know, publications aren't paying much, but... I haven't made a lot of money from journalism. Yes, because that's what I do every day.
Journalism is in reporting.
No. I mean, writing for a publication.
Okay.
So writing is, you know, if you look at Apple Music, you know those like albums, that's written by somebody.
Yes.
That is writing.
Yes.
It's not necessarily journalism,
yes,
but it's writing.
Mm.
There's writing for TV. That's not necessarily journalism, but it's writing. There's researching for documentaries. That is writing, but not journalism. So, yeah.
Yeah, thank you for that. No, absolutely. Thank you so much for sitting down with me. This was fun. I want to thank Andy for inviting me. This was fun.